Good morning. Friday night, we looked at a question. So for those that were there Friday night, I'm just going to thank you for your patience, because there'll be a little probably repeat this morning of some of the things, but hopefully still some encouragement from the things that we cover. So we had looked at, we had started on Friday night 2 weeks ago looking at Galatians chapter 1, and then out of that, Jason had asked a question kind of at the end of that first night, which we'd sent out on the email. You may have seen that from Joel. It was a question around why is it that some people, after coming to the Lord and so often experiencing a genuine work of salvation in their life, end up coming under the law? And so it was a question we looked at, or we talked about Friday night, and it's a very real question to me, because it happened to me in my walk with the Lord. I came to the Lord 20, I was doing the math here just before, 23 years ago now, and not long after coming to the Lord, I did come under the law in a really strong way. And so for me, and I was sharing, as Lisa had alluded to, I was sharing some testimony of what that looked like for me and how God saved me from that and how he also used it for good in my life. And so I wanted to look a little bit at that same question today, and hopefully still for those that were there, it can be an encouragement. And if you weren't there, hopefully it can be a blessing to you as well as we look at it. And so you look at this, and it's an interesting thing, because we all look at, we know the story. When was the law added? The law was added, first of all, it started with a promise to Abraham, right? That was where the first promise was given. It said he was going to make him a blessing to all nations, that nations would come forth from him, and all of these things, that he gave him a promise. And then we go on from there to Isaac, and then to Jacob, and then from Jacob, they end up in Egypt. And he again gives them this great promise when they've been in Egypt for, 430 years, I think. He says, I've heard your cry. Again, it's like a cry for salvation. And he hears their cry. At this point, there's no law. And Moses ends up going back to the people. And what did he tell the people? He says, God has heard your cry, and I'm going to take you to a land flowing with milk and honey. Right? It's going to be a place of rest compared to the bondage, so to speak, that you're in here in Egypt. And so he takes them out. And then after taking them out is where the law comes. Right? He gives them, takes them out, and they come to Mount Sinai, and he gives them the law. And then for years, the Israelites lived under this law, and until Jesus came. And in Galatians chapter 3, I was just reading this, and it says here, Galatians 3:23, so many of these passages, it feels like between Friday night and today, and that Galatians, as we get to it, some of these things as we work through it on Friday night are going to be refreshers. But we didn't look at this verse specifically, I don't think, on Friday night, this last Friday. So Galatians 3:23, it says, before faith came, we were kept in custody under the law, being shut up to a faith which was later to be revealed. Therefore, the law has become our tutor to lead us to Christ, so that we may be justified by faith. And then it says, but now the faith has come, we're no longer under a tutor. So the law was given, and even if you look at this back, naturally speaking, the Israelites, he gave them the law ultimately that they could see what? That they were law breakers, and that they needed a savior. And Jesus comes, and he is that savior. And I think a lot of people now look at the gospel and say, well, the law no longer exists. The law is done. But that's not true. The law still is real today in the sense of seeing that we are a lawbreaker. And when I say that, it's not meaning that we need to go back to Leviticus and really pound through Leviticus and figure out all the things that we need to do under the law. But the Lord allows people to come under the law, like me, to lead us to Christ. And it's interesting when I say that, and I've been thinking about it much this week as Jason had asked this question. Even this period when I came under the law, when I say I came under the law, I won't share maybe as much detail as I shared on Friday night, but I came to the Lord. The Lord did really a miraculous work. I was living in slavery to sin, and the greatest thing that he did was set me free from sin. But I experienced joy and life and saw God working, in some cases, in miraculous ways. I can remember ways that God really was working miraculously. It was super encouraging. But then slowly I began to come under the law. And for me, as I said Friday night, really I think the root for me was pride. Because as I saw God working, I lost sight of the fact that all of this was happening in my life because of Jesus and faith in Jesus. And the enemy at the same time is there. And I started to listen to lies that somehow, you know, this is me, something I've done, and that I'm better than other people, and I begin to look down on people and judge people. And so because of that, God ends up allowing me to come under the law, and it grows worse and worse and worse, to the point, as I said Friday night, where I struggled. I remember walking into a gas station, buying something, a drink, walking out to my car, throwing the drink in the garbage can at the gas pump and getting in my car because I couldn't drink it. I didn't think God wanted me to have it. It was like total bondage. It was absolutely bizarre. And it affected me so bad. I struggled to work. I wasn't effectively doing my job anymore because my mind was just tormented. I'll talk about how I was saved from it. But that's the place that I was in. And it says that the law was given to lead us to Christ. If any point in there someone had asked me, how are you saved? What do you think I would have said? I said, I'm saved by faith in Jesus Christ. I would have said the exact right thing. But there's a difference between being able to verbalize it and for it to be totally real in your life, where in your heart of hearts, you're just like, you could just say, there's only one way that I'm saved, and it is through the work that Jesus has done in my life. And as I came under that law, I don't think that that's what you would have seen from me. First of all, I don't think that that life that I'd experienced was slipping away, was ebbing away, because it became a bondage to me. And there wasn't life in that place. Jesus says, I came that they would have life and have it abundantly. And I was no longer experiencing that life. So why? This is the question. And you know, it's interesting to me. I'd never looked at this before. I double-checked myself this morning because I said it Friday night. When Jesus, before Jesus goes to the cross, what does he say to Peter? Before Peter denies Jesus, Jesus tells him, you're going to deny me. And he says to him, Simon, Satan has asked permission. That's the way it says it in the NASB. Some of the same, slightly different. But very clear, Satan has asked permission, much like he asked permission with Job to test Job. He's asked permission to sift you like wheat. And I just asked the question Friday night, I'll ask it now. What was the answer? The answer was, you have permission. It's not written, but we know it must have been yes, because Satan wouldn't have been able to sift him if God didn't say, yes, you have permission. It's a very interesting, you think about that, why in the world would the Lord say, yes, Peter can be sifted? Satan, you have permission to sift him like wheat. Why? Well, remember what I told you. I had come onto this place of, there was tremendous pride, losing sight of the fact that it was Jesus Christ that had done this work in my life. And so God, I think in a similar way, he allows these things to come. He allowed it to come. So when we look at Peter before, what was Peter like before? Peter was, I'm going to say this because I was there. He was full of pride. Lord, even if everyone else denies you, I will not deny you. I got this. I'm strong enough for this. And in the end of it all, only what, weeks later, you have this interaction with Jesus and Peter beside the campfire and just see a different Peter. A totally different Peter. Simon, do you love me more than these? You know, we could talk about this. We talked about this. He says, Lord, you know I love you. just feed my sheep. Simon, do you love me? Just ask him three times, do you love me? Do you love me? And you just sense such a difference in Peter. And it was that Peter. Could you imagine if the Peter from weeks ago that never got sifted was used like Peter was used at Pentecost? What would have happened to that Peter? It probably would have been the end of him. Totally shipwrecked when he saw thousands come to the Lord through him. Can you imagine what would have happened to his head? It would have exploded. But God allowed him to get humbled so that when God used him mightily at Pentecost, Peter could say, that was Jesus. Like, there is no other explanation, but I know the man I am. I'm the man who denies that I even know Jesus. Not once, but three times I deny. So you think of this, God allows these things to happen. And I look at this coming under the law. I'm not going to say that it's the same exactly for everybody, but God is, what I can say categorically is that God allows these things to happen because he wants to produce something in us greater. It's a tutor to lead us to Christ. And again, you can notionally give it, but I can tell you how I was saved. I said this Friday night. And the story of blind Bartimaeus ties in because I see this beautiful picture of a man who so desperately wants to be saved. In this case, he wants to be saved from blindness, but he wants to be saved. And he comes to this place because pride, so much of pride is what people think of me. How do I look? I was looking at the way that Jesus would strongly rebuke the Pharisees. Woe to you, Pharisees. You're like whitewashed tombs. And he says, you're so concerned what the outside looks like, but inside there's no life. Rather, he tells them, which was so interesting, like, first, what did he say? Clean the inside of the cup. Then the outside will be clean also. What was he saying? He says, you need me. Nobody can clean the inside of the cup. I was thinking about this world that we live in today. You hear these statements like self-help, or I'm trying to become a better version of myself. That's like telling someone you need to clean the inside of the cup. There's only one that can clean the inside of the cup, and his name is Jesus. And so I was thinking... thinking of blind Bartimaeus and thinking how he didn't care. No, maybe at one point, because it does say he wants to regain his sight. So you almost get the impression that somehow blindness had come upon him, which is very possible. People will lose their sight. Something happens. We don't know Bartimaeus before this story. Maybe he was like Peter. Maybe he was a man who had great vision and was proud. Probably. I was that way. And then circumstances come into your life and you come to a place where you hear this man Jesus is coming and the biggest thing that I took away from it, and I love what Lisa was saying, talk about the persistence and crying out and not giving up, and those things are totally true. For me, what struck me, because it's real to me, I think of my own journey, was he's crying out and people tell him, hey, be quiet. And he cries out all the more. He's just, I don't care what you think. I need this man named Jesus. And for me, when I came under the law, that is how salvation came. I think I remember even where I was. And I just cried out, Jesus, save me. I have nothing else. It's just a crying out, Lord, save me. And as I said Friday night, it wasn't instant. It wasn't like, boom, all of a sudden. But God began to just slowly over time, this bondage that I was under of being under the law began to break. But when I talked a little bit more about this Friday, but let me say this, like the pride, so much of pride is like the great analogy that we've heard others use, and I love using it because it's so real. Pride is like an onion. It's not like all of a sudden you just, boom, pride's done, right? Like I think from now till Jesus comes, where we go to be with Jesus, he'll constantly be peeling away. You'll see another layer and he'll keep peeling it away. But I would say he lopped off a few good layers of pride in my life in that season, where I came away just recognizing I am not better than other people. And I'm not saved by my something better in me. If you look at the story of the woman that comes, we talked about this Friday night, when Jesus comes and the Pharisee says, hey, I think his name was Simon as well, come and dine at my house. And then the woman comes in and she pours the vial of perfume on his feet, and she's there, she's wiping Jesus' feet with her hair. And what does the Pharisee say? He says, if this man was a prophet, then surely he would know this woman is a sinner. And I thought about it, and it's like, by virtue of saying he would know this woman is a sinner, it's almost implying, and I'm not, right? And this is where I feel like, for me, the law was so effective in my life as a tutor. When it says to lead us to Christ, I feel like it's almost by revelation you see this. But you come to this place where you realize, okay, I'd experienced Jesus, I'd experienced salvation, but then somehow it got warped in my mind that somehow I was helping him out. And yet then through God's perfect way, he humbled me and he broke me down to the point that I could realize, you know what? It's like with Job, what did he say? I'd heard of you with the hearing of the eye, or the hearing of the ear. I'm grabbing my ear. Richard's looking at me going, that's your ear. Heard of you with the hearing of the ear, but now I've seen you. Right? Like there's something it went from my head to my heart. It made this 1 foot journey that can be so hard to make. And I just feel like coming under the law was, in a lot of ways for me, was this tutor that said, Tim, it's in your head that you're saved by faith, not a result of works so that no one can boast. But you needed me to help you make it real. That you could see that you are not saved by, and I said this briefly, but in our early days, there was a lot of things that was easy for us to get caught up in. There'd be lots of stories about how much people would read their Bible, how much they would pray, how much they would fast, all the things that they'd got. That was a big thing. Oh, what have you gotten rid of? All these things that were happening. And it all fed this thing of all the stuff I'm doing. And if I'm doing all these things, then I must be doing well in the Lord. And you lose sight of all these things. It's all about what people think. Oh, you got rid of that? You did that for Jesus? Whoa, you're doing well. So it fed all of that for me, and the pride came with it. And then God had to rip it all away. And man, like, you could look at that and say, well, Tim, do you wish you'd never come under the law? I'd say, like, how could I ever say that? Like, this is how now I'm realizing, even as I say this, this is why Paul could say, no, the law is good. The law is good. And I can genuinely say the law is good. Because without it, and me coming under it, and coming into this place of terrible bondage, I would never have come out with that deeper revelation. I could say, Lord, I've heard of you with the hearing of the ear, but now I see it. I see this incredible need that I have of you, and that I'm saved not by works, but I'm saved only because of what you have done for me, and having faith in that, believing that you've done these things for me. And then, yes, it works itself out in obedience. But you think of this case with Simon the Pharisee. And then Jesus says to him, hey, Simon, I have something to tell you. I want to ask you something. Right? Or they were both sinners. They were both sinners. It's so easy for us to get caught in the trap. I did this. I would justify myself by comparing myself among each other. I would look at my friends and go, well, so-and-so does that, and I don't do that, so I'm better for them. Just a wicked trap you can get caught into. That's why Paul warns against comparing ourselves among ourselves. But that's really what he was doing. He says, well, this woman, she's a sinner. Like, we all know what she does. You justify yourself, and you fail to come to Christ and realize your desperate need of him. Your desperate, desperate need of him. But she had seen that. And so, as a result, she loved much. She loved much. And I was just thinking about these passages. There's actually a number of passages that talk about how Jesus Christ was a stumbling block. In 1 Corinthians 1, verse 22, it talks briefly about this. I'll just read a couple of these passages quickly. For Jews request a sign, and Greeks seek after wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. To the Jews a stumbling block, and to Greeks foolishness. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Then it says in Galatians 5:11, I'm just going to quickly read a couple of these. It says, but I, brethren, if I still preach circumcision, why am I persecuted? Then the stumbling block of the cross has been abolished. Why was the cross a stumbling block to the Jews? That's what I was pondering on this morning. We read this passage from Romans 10, and I'll read this one too, because I think there's some insight into why the cross was a stumbling block. Brethren, my heart's desire and my prayer to God for them, this is Romans 10, 1. Brethren, my heart's desire and my prayer to God for them is for their salvation. For I testify about them that they have a zeal for God, but not in accordance with knowledge. For not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. They were seeking to establish their own righteousness. For me, that was never my intent. I never knowingly, if you'd asked me, hey, Tim, do you want to establish your own righteousness? Do you want to try and work your way to heaven? I would never have said yes. But if you'd kind of drove past it and kind of got really what was the heart of the issue, was still coming down to what people thought it was. There actually was this part of sort of establishing some type of outward veneer that people would look at and think Tim was doing well. And literally, we had that. It says, oh, I can see you're doing well, brother. We would have these things. And that would, oh, if somebody told me I was doing well, I would walk off. I would be on cloud nine. I'd be, wow, I'm doing well. That brother thinks I'm doing well. It was all about this. It was all about what people could see and did it look good to them. And I lost sight of the fact it actually only matters what Jesus sees. And whether in his eyes, he would say, well done, good and faithful servant. Well done, son. You're doing well, right? And it was just, for me, God had to rip away at all of these things. And so, to me, that's why it was a stumbling block. Because this cross was going to strip away at all of these things. Like, okay, it doesn't matter anymore what these people think of you. It only matters what I think. And it really puts it to the test. What matters more to us? What people think of us? Or what Jesus thinks of us. This was where it was at for me. Jason talked a little bit about this Friday night too, of this desire to please men. And then I talked about that passage in Matthew 23. That was really the Pharisees, really was so focused on that. And I touched on why then does Jesus allow this to happen? And I talked about the story with Peter. Why did he let Satan sift him as wheat? The other one that came to my mind is Deuteronomy chapter 8. Even when the Israelites, and we talked about that, it says in Deuteronomy 8, 2 and 3, you shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years, that he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. He humbled you and let you be hungry. A parent letting their child be hungry. It seems crazy. But I was thinking, like, why? Why would he do it? It was actually to lead them to Christ. I know it sounds crazy to say that because Christ hadn't come. But in a lot of ways, it was the same thing. Because what he longed for, I believe, was he longed that the people of Israel would learn like David. David, nothing changed between when the Israelites came and when David was on the earth. But David knew what it was to cry out to his father and to cry out to him. And that was his longing, why he would let them be hungry. But instead, what did they do? They just grumbled and complained, and they got upset with Moses and Aaron, and it wasn't working in them what he was longing, which was just cry out to me. I want you to come to me. And then I was interested by this. When I was looking through, I was thinking, knowing this element here for me of pride, how many times it says, where then is boasting in the New Covenant or in the New Testament? And it comes up a number of times. It's all in this context of coming to this revelation that we're saved by grace through faith and not as a result of works. Romans 3, 27 and 28. It says, where then is boasting? It is excluded. By what kind of law? Of works? No, but by a law of faith. For we maintain that a man is justified by faith apart from the works of the law. This all comes back to this part of the stumbling block and starting to rip that away. And where we come to the place where we can't, where we can just, it's such a twist. If you come to Jesus and you genuinely come by faith, do you read your Bible? Of course you do. Do you pray? Of course you do. Do you fast? Perhaps you fast. But the heart of it is all changed. We're not doing it because now by doing these things that this is what puts me in good standing with God. We're doing these things because it's a longing to know our Father, to have a close fellowship with him, to be strengthened in our faith with him. The reason completely changes. And if somebody comes to you and says, oh, I know someone who spends 2 hours in prayer, you say, well, praise the Lord. If that's good for them, that's great. I had 5 minutes today. That's all I was able to. Like, it doesn't matter because my 5 minutes was sweet fellowship. It all changes. I said this Friday night, I would be so affected. I'd hear one evening somebody fasted. The next morning, I would fast. Like, it was just instant. I was so governed by what I would hear and all of these things. And nobody probably knew that these things were happening to me, but I would hear this stuff and I would try and emulate it. I was trying to figure this all out. I was going to serve the Lord and I was going to do well. And I realized I didn't have the revelation of what it truly was to come by faith. And interestingly, the times in my life after this that I grew the most in my walk with the Lord were the times that it was like now a different Peter. The times when God led me out, or Abraham's a better example, where he led me into circumstances that I didn't know, where I was just totally cast on the Lord. And one of the time for me that I think of most distinctly was when I began to get to know my wife. Without getting into the circumstances, it was a time of significant testing for my faith. And I felt like I for so many years, I trusted in men and I'd looked to men. And I'd come to a place where I couldn't do that. There was only one person I could really look to. And God did bring a brother into my life to help me at this time, who was from a different country completely. It wasn't part of our fellowship, nothing, but kind of miraculously brought him in to guide me a little bit and encourage me in it. But I was so cast on the Lord to look to him and to learn to walk by faith. And as I got to know Whitney, I could just see God just produce incredible fruit in my life. I could see it. That God was working as I learned to walk by faith. Right? You think of the verse that says, come to me, all you are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. That was me. I was heavy laden at first because of sin, but then I became heavy laden because I came under the law. And the law is as great a weight as sin. I think the law brings death. But then he says, take my yoke and upon you and learn from me. What does he say? He says, you're going to learn to walk with me. And I'm going to teach you how to walk this thing out. And that's what Jesus began to do in my life. As I began to walk by faith, Do you understand everything? No. But that's where the father of faith was too. Abraham didn't know where he was going. He just knew, I'm going somewhere. Wherever he shows me, that's where I'm going. And that's what it's like to be led by the Spirit. That's what he said to Nicodemus. He said, the wind blows and no one knows where it comes from or where it's going. And this is what you'll find at times. This is your walk with the Lord. I'm experiencing that now in my life in some ways. I don't know what this means, but I trust you, Lord. And I just, that's all I can do. I'm going to trust in you and not lean on my own understanding. Right? And then when God works, there's no boasting except what he says is, let him who boasts, boast in the Lord of what Jesus Christ has done. And then you can go to someone and genuinely say to them, what Jesus Christ has done in my life, he can do in yours, because it is nothing that I did, but it's just him working. If you're willing to surrender your life to him and trust him, he will do the same for you as he's done for me, which is to bring a freedom in your life, to bring fruit in your life, to bring change, sanctification, all of those things that he longs to give you when you come to him humbly. And that's when you come back to him. So at the end of it all, I see this as he's ripping away. He's ripping away. But the way to salvation is clear. Whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. But you come to this place where you've been humble and you're just crying out. And I was saying this Friday night, and I say it again now. It's a mustard seed of faith. It doesn't have to be this mountain of faith, but a mustard seed of faith in the fact that the same power that raised Jesus Christ from the dead can free us from that place of death. Whether that's because we're stuck in sin or whether we're under the law or wherever we are, he's there if you just cry out to him to bring that freedom in your life. Calling on the name of the Lord and trusting in him. And then realizing, hey, I need, Lord, I don't know. It's great to be able to acknowledge, Lord, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to walk this out. And that's what he's saying. That's exactly what I want. I just want you to get in the yoke with me, and I'm going to teach you. And you're going to turn to the right, and you're going to turn to the left, and you're going to hear a voice. I know it says behind you. In this case, it would be right beside you. Saying, no, we're still going straight here, Tim. We're still going straight. That's not the way. And so it's not to say, we taught Friday night too, it's not to say when I say this that fellowship is not a massive blessing. It is such a gift from the Lord. And we talked Friday night about how much during the season of our lives, in my life, without fellowship, I don't know that I'd be here. Like, what a gift. But it's such a difference. God has changed that, where for me, it wrongly influenced my view of how I was doing and I was seeking to please men, to now just the reason I think why he's given the fellowship to us, which is to encourage us and to strengthen us and to be a blessing to us and to challenge us and exhort us and all the things that fellowship does. Right? It's such a gift. I know Friday night we ended, and I had already talked about this story of the woman and the love that she had for Jesus. Could you imagine walking into this room of Pharisees and being willing to just weep on Jesus' feet? It's so much like Bartimaeus. Like, I don't care what any of you think of me. And you think I'm a sinner? But I wouldn't be surprised if already at that point the power of sin may have been broken in her life, because Jesus Christ says to her, like, your sins are forgiven. Right. I just see this woman who's had a revelation that Jesus Christ is able to save her. And it no longer matters what anybody else thinks. And I mean, that's my longing for all of us, that we would be in that place of having that first love for Jesus, stemming from the fact that we've seen God so miraculously work in our lives. And for many of us, we have come under the law. It's not just me that has that testimony. There's others that I know, and maybe others who I don't know in this body that have that testimony. Wherever you're at, if that is part of your testimony, if you feel like you're there now, God has allowed it. Don't lose heart. But know that You can call on his name. Humble yourself and just call on his name and say, Jesus, save me. Save me. Lord, I'm coming to you weary and heavy laden, and I need rest. Faith, Joshua couldn't give them rest. The law can't give us rest. But faith in Jesus Christ can give us rest. Rest from all those things we feel we need to do, or whatever it is, and rest from feeling like it matters what anybody else thinks. That was massive for me, of coming to a freedom of what other people think about me. It's probably, I know actually, I can say, that's an onion that God's still peeling in my life. That's not an onion that's been totally eradicated, but he continues to peel away those layers too, right? Because it all relates to pride. So I hope that this encourages you and challenges you. The longing is that we would experience the freedom and that we could be like that woman who loves much, because we see so clearly what Jesus Christ has done in our life and have a clear revelation, and we're learning to walk with him and becoming gentle and humble of heart, just like him, as his spirit works in our lives.